This is Scott Becker with Becker's Healthcare. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Dr. Jeff Vlasic. Jeff has got a fascinating background. He does major interesting things on the health IT side, as well as on the private equity side, and he's an emergency room physician by background. Jeff, can you take a moment to introduce yourself, and then we'll talk a little bit about your career and what you guys do at VNR and more.
Sure, thank you. So like Scott, you mentioned, I'm a healthcare-focused management consultant and operating partner. At least that's the title I'm going with right now. It's hard to find a concise title for exactly what we do at VNR, but I think that's a pretty good approximation.
Thank you. And tell us a little bit about how you got into this. I mean, you're a practicing physician by background. How did you get into this world of management consulting and doing these other interesting things? Tell us a bit about your passion for it and what you look at and what you do.
Sure. So I have a pretty interesting family background. My family is very focused on business and entrepreneurship. My grandfather started the Vlasic Pickle Company, which allowed us to establish a family office and get involved in all sorts of interesting opportunities. We didn't have any physicians in the family, but I really distinctly remember growing up and admiring really just kind of how physicians in the community were respected, and specifically several physicians that my family had interacted with. There's one doctor, Dr. Davidson, called him Dr. D. He delivered me and my four siblings, and is just really well known for the level of care he takes of people. And that really drew me in. It was really about the people that you would get to meet and care for in healthcare. So I really, from a pretty early age, decided to pursue a career in medicine.
And how did you move from medicine to what you do today?
So I had kind of a linear path at first, and then it took a major pivot. I went to school out on the East Coast at Hopkins and then Georgetown, and then came back for medical school at University of Michigan, where I stayed for around 10 years. I, throughout medical school, I wasn't sure what I wanted to specialize in, and then ultimately chose to specialize in emergency medicine. Just love the people. And when you're rotating through the different specialties in medical school, you kind of find your own tribe. And I really felt like people in emergency medicine were kind of quirky in the way that I was quirky, and really enjoyed the culture and also just the body of knowledge that you have to master to treat people in emergencies and know a little bit about all the different specialties. And it really helps you understand healthcare too, because you're on the front line. If something's going on in the outpatient world, trickles down to the emergency department. Something's happening in the inpatient world, same thing. And while I was faculty at the University of Michigan, I was working clinically out in Flint, Michigan, which is a community that is really great to work in, a really great emergency department at a place called Hurley Medical Center. And I enjoyed my job, but I found myself asking a lot of questions about patterns of presentations I would see, a lot of trauma, penetrating and non-penetrating trauma. So non-penetrating being something like a car accident, penetrating being something like a gunshot wound or stabbing, a lot of chronic illness that was poorly managed, a lot of challenges with regards to access to healthcare, and just practical problems like you can't just refer someone to follow up with a cardiologist. What does that mean? Do you have transportation? How are you going to get there? And, can you take that time off of work? And I felt like I really was tuned in to systems level challenges that affect people's everyday health. And I really enjoyed my role in it, but I wanted to expand my vocabulary and toolbox to take on larger scale systems level challenges to help improve health outcomes. And that led me to enroll in a PhD program when I was practicing full-time that focuses on large-scale infrastructure, people, process, and technology, how you can change that in a way to drive specific organizational outcomes. And I met my business partner there and ultimately made the decision to stop practicing once our consulting business started to get busier and busier, and made that transition about 3 to 4 years ago, and really haven't looked back. It's been an incredible journey.
That's fantastic. And tell us the most interesting things that you work on today. What are the most interesting projects, two or three, just as a concept, so people understand, what is a doctor from a family office, but with a great work ethic? You know, so many kids that grew up having a family office of some sort don't have the magnificent work ethic that you and your four siblings have. So hats off to your parents and who raised you folks. Just fantastic. But what are the biggest issues you see in healthcare today, or that you guys are working on?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that, you know, if you think about the North Star for healthcare, it's really the quadruple aim: improving patient experience, population health, decreasing the cost of care. But that fourth point, the achieving joy, well-being, and resilience among care teams, I think that one is often overlooked. And I, you know, in this past several years, have gone to dozens and dozens of hospitals, health systems, organizations, and I think there is really pervasive change fatigue, where people are just mentally and emotionally exhausted from there being so many changes implemented over an extended period of time. And I think that's created some real problems for healthcare organizations of all shapes and sizes, whether they're, you know, large scale provider organization or smaller healthcare vendor. You know, turnover is high. People are oftentimes presented with changes that they weren't involved in co-developing. And there's a lot of challenges that have come with how organizations really have to adopt a new set of behaviors to comply and adopt more contemporary reimbursement models, you know, moving from fee-for-service to more value-based care.
Do you think sort of this physician well-being, provider well-being, exhaustion, is that a function of the system, or is that a function just that we have massive shortages coming up for 325 million people and there's no good answers to it? What do you sort of view there?
No, I think it's definitely a function of the system. I think that for a long time, you know, healthcare for a long time, and it's not necessarily specific or unique to healthcare, but it's been very focused on ideas, breakthrough, but it struggled with follow through and implementation. You know, generally speaking, for every dollar we invest in a new idea, we invest about a penny in implementing that idea. And it's a problem because
Repeat that for a second. Because so many systems that are implemented are not optimized. Repeat that last thought for a second.
Sure. So, you know, for someone to receive the expected benefit of some type of evidence-based or data-driven intervention, they have to receive it, right? And something that's poorly implemented or not implemented at all does not produce the expected benefits. And there's been a chronic underinvestment in implementation and a chronic overinvestment in ideas. And actually, if we reverse the clock 10, 20 years, and we took some evidence-based treatments, this could be a process, it could be a prescription medication. If we made sure every patient that was meant to have that medication received it, or we made sure that every process that could benefit a certain patient, in fact, occurred when appropriate, we would be far better off in terms of healthcare quality and safety outcomes than we are chasing, you know, the latest breakthroughs.
Fantastic. And then when you look at your advice for healthcare leaders, you're about the least pretentious person in the world. But if you were to give advice to healthcare leaders, you know, you're a brilliant guy. You're both a physician by background, a management consultant. What advice do you have for healthcare leaders besides better optimization of what you're doing versus adding more things? What other advice do you have for healthcare leaders?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, you know, people and companies really you can judge based on their behavior in addition to what they say. And I think really giving your staff and your, you know, partners the dignity of focus, really being able to focus on something for an extended period of time, giving the resources that match the outcome that your advertising needs to be achieved. So I think that's one really important thing when we look at strategy. People have oftentimes, I mean, if you look at the strategic goals of a hospital or health systems, they're oftentimes very similar about providing a great patient experience, so on and so forth, but really understanding how are you allocating resources and protecting time to incrementally achieve that mission. And I say, you know, send the bill through Congress, you know, walk me through how you're going to implement this. No leaps of logic, no shortcuts. And let's understand how the organization that you've structured, the roles and responsibilities match, everything matches, and it makes sense. I think from a high level, it's really, really important, because I think a lot of staff I talk to, and I spend a lot of time talking with frontline staff all the way up through the C-suite, they feel like they have very ambitious goals, but they don't always feel like the work environment structure of their role supports achieving those goals in the stated time frame.
And so they really have to allocate the right leaders to those goals. If they're big goals, they got to put some of their best people on them, and they got to allocate resources to those goals too. So it might be counterintuitive, but if you want great patient experience, you might have to assign somebody as senior as your COO to make sure that actually happens. One of the most trusted lieutenants, women or men, to make sure that that really becomes a priority of the organization.
Exactly. And really boiling down to behavior change, in my mind, you know, that's the behavior change is the final common pathway to performance improvement. So what changed in the system so that your fill in the blank 10, 100, 10,000 employees are showing up and doing something slightly differently tomorrow? And that different behavior leads to the outcome that you're interested in, whatever that outcome may be, reduce readmissions, increase revenue. It doesn't matter. But I find there's some red lights right away. People have these high-level goals, but then cannot articulate how things are going to incrementally move towards that goal.
Got it. Thank you. And then in terms of your own career so far, most interesting project or what you're most proud of in your own career so far?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think I've been really proud that I may have left patient care, but I didn't have to leave having really great relationships where people, you know, aren't afraid to be candid and confide in us and really help us understand what is going on, either in their life or the organization. Oftentimes, the two are inseparable. A recent project that was really fun, we did some due diligence on a healthcare imaging company that helps basically improve the output from MRI machines. And we do above core due diligence. So you still need your accountants and attorneys, but we really look at the business itself and how it's operating in the specific part of the healthcare industry that it's in. And oftentimes with newer organizations, they're, especially in healthcare, the technology is often commercialized outside of academia. So there's oftentimes a very clear narrative and backstory for how something was scientifically validated, but it wasn't necessarily market validated. So in this case, we had a lot of fun convening a bunch of different neurosurgeons, neurologists, people who own and operate imaging centers, hospital COOs who help interact with the corporate purchasing department, and really took this piece of technology through the ringer and understood and examined all the underlying hypotheses that are baked into their deck, so to speak, you know, how they're going to achieve their growth plan. And we find that that's just an extraordinary experience, because it really helps kind of make a lot of things that are implicit explicit. And it was just great to work with a dynamic group of people as well.
That's fantastic. And what is anything that you view as sort of a setback in your professional career that's helped you become more motivated or stronger as you've gone forward? Any setbacks or thoughts on that?
You know, the thing that comes to mind first is just, you know, changing my identity, really, from a physician to, you know, being in the consulting private capital space. It was hard. I think, you know, if you say you're a physician and you kind of, and that's your elevator pitch or, you know, statement on who you are, I think the assumption generally is that you're a pretty good person. You're pretty, you know, dedicated. And there's a lot of cultural associations with that professional role. Those definitely do not carry over to being a consultant or advisor, or especially it's just hard even sometimes to articulate all the things that we do. So I really had to work through that. And I think it was ultimately good, but it really took me a while to have that change in identity. And certainly, I think leaving that academic large-scale institutional role, some people still don't understand the change I made, and others totally get it.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I think, isn't that a fascinating thing that when you move from this true core profession where it is a clear identity, I am a doctor, you get treated and respected in a certain way, positive and negative. I mean, you get sort of put into one bit of a box in a way, but it's a highly respected box. And then when you move from that to management consultant, you sort of tell people, I'm a doctor by background, but they sort of view it very differently. Now you're a management consultant and you have to prove all over again that you're very bright, very focused, very intent on really solving somebody's problems and all those things. So is that a fair summary?
There is. And there's some challenges are similar. I mean, when I was practicing, let me tell you, you walk into the room and you interact with a patient who just had a bad experience with a physician, and you spend 2/3 of the time apologizing for that experience that you had nothing to do with. It could have been in a different state or a different country. And, there's a reason behind that, right? I mean, emotionally, that person felt mistreated or something with the healthcare system in general, and you're a part of that system. And I think the same thing in consulting. Oftentimes, you're not the first management consultant that someone has ever encountered. So it's incumbent on you to demonstrate why you are different. And for me, it comes down to relationships and being just fixated and wanting to be a partner on implementation. I cannot count the amount of organizations, people, executives who have been left holding some type of playbook that they're still scratching their heads about why they paid for it. But what they really need help doing is taking the people in their organization and moving them incrementally towards the abstract visions in that playbook. And that's what implementation is. So between listening to people who generally have all the answers, like people on the front line of healthcare, physicians, nurses, et cetera, and helping people actually implement change, I think that we try to work through and differentiate ourselves in the industry.
That's fantastic. And I think that divergence between consultants that just consult and those that stay involved in the long run for implementation in different ways is very different. And that's not that one is right or wrong, but as you said, so many people have so many shiny new toys, but if they don't use those toys well, or if they don't use the plan well and work the plan, then they really are just toys. They're not really implementable, important execution things for the long run. So I think so true. Dr. Vlasic, let me ask you one final question. Where do people find you and your colleague who lead your consulting firm if they want to reach you, if they want to visit with you and learn more about what you do and where you can be of help?
Sure. Yeah. It's probably the best way is on our website, vlasicroth.com, or just looking me up on LinkedIn. We have an online scheduling system, but we're always available to chat and we're always looking for opportunities where we can have these longer term engagements and really see something through A to Z.
Well, just fantastic. Jeff, it's a pleasure visiting with you. Really, every time I get a chance to talk to you, which is a few times now, just a pleasure. Incredibly bright and incredibly centered, and just a pleasure to visit with you. And we wish you continued good luck, and thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you.
My pleasure.